Doug, thank you very much for doing this. I said just prior to this, this might have been the best weekend overall of NFL football with all of the late game drama. Would you agree with that assertion?
Yeah, it was it was pretty nuts. It was hard to keep up at times, but you know, week 11, that's what you want. We got another banger tonight with the Buccaneers and the Rams. So yeah, it looks really good.
Yeah, it opened with a great game between the Cardinals and the Seahawks, one that went down to the wire. Maybe we get that tonight between the Rams and the Buccaneers. For a team with expectations, was the Green Bay Packers loss the worst of the weekend?
Well, I think a couple of things, because Aaron Rodgers, I mean, that offense is, you know, they've had issues with their targets, and Valdes-Scantling with that fumble, that was a killer. But I think when we talk about the Packers and the Colts, we're underrating the Colts defense. That has been a top three defense all year. They do a lot of too high safety stuff, and they'll bring a safety down. A lot of really interesting blitz packages. DeForest Buckner has added a ton to the front. And then Julian Blackman, the third round. I don't know how they got him in the third round, except people don't watch Utah tape or something, I guess. But he's been just a revelation for them. Malik Hooker, their great deep safety, is on injured reserve. So Blackman comes in, and he's got, you know, he allowed a reception in the first week of his NFL career. He hasn't allowed one since. And he was the one to punch that ball out, which kind of, you know, moved things. I think the thing about that game, I was a little surprised that Phillip Rivers was as effective as he was. And you have to remember the Packers' defense, I mean, the front is great. Kenny Clark might be the most underrated interior defensive lineman in the NFL. I mean, Mark Schofield might do a podcast every week, and it seems like every week we're like, okay, you double Kenny Clark, and then you start everywhere else. But that the linebacker core, not great. The secondary outside of J.R. Alexander, not great. So I think what we saw from the Packers was their offense will take them anywhere, and their defense will pull them back. And when you have a defense like Indianapolis's where – They can make plays and create turnovers and create stops. Green Bay doesn't really have the defense to counter that, and they're kind of relying too much on their offense to get everything done. That felt a lot like a playoff game. Obviously, different conferences or, you know, Super Bowl preview, who knows? But, you know, in those, you know, really the crucial moments, you want your defense to be able to step up and make a play. I think the Packers have had a problem with that all season.
The other side, the opposite might be true. The Colts' defense will take them anywhere they want to go, and the offense might be what limits it. What is the ceiling of that offense with Phillip Rivers?
You know, I think they have a good enough run game, and I think Frank Reich is really good in scheming a quarterback around his limitations. And you hear about coaches scheming to a quarterback's attributes. I think quarterback is almost, I was watching Tua's tape this morning and thinking that quarterbacking is almost a reductive art where you're trying to do more to eliminate mistakes than you are to create big plays. And I think Frank Reich, Indianapolis head coaches, going back through his history, he had Rivers obviously in San Diego back when the Chargers were in San Diego, and he had a really good way of mitigating Rivers, what I call the rogue gene with quarterbacks. Some guys just have that where they make these throws and you're like, what? Phillip Rivers last year had 6 interceptions in the last 2 minutes of games, which is by far the most in the last 10 years in any season. The problem with Rivers right now is his mind is thinking one thing and his arm is telling him very much another. His mind thinks it's about 2011, and his arm is like, no, dude, it's 2020. It's almost 2021. You're 37. You can't do that stuff anymore. So the ceiling is low, but I think it's relatively, you know, maintainable, to invent a word. And I think that defense can take them a long way. It's just a matter of a consistent run game. They have a tremendous offensive line. But it really is managing Rivers's his kind of, you know, like I said, the rogue gene, the kind of weird stuff he does, versus just, you know what, we don't need you to create the hero plays. We need you to help sustain the offense. Take the underneath stuff. Take the release route. Take the leak or the check down or whatever. If you do that, we'll be fine. If you start throwing the ball around like, you know, you think you're 27 again, we may have problems.
I love that other than the rest of us not trying to produce double-digit offspring, that we're kind of like Philip Rivers. Like, our mind thinks we can do stuff that our body knows we can't, and it reminds us later on that day or the next day that we just aren't able to do those things. That's a great way to describe it. Doug Farrar.
Oh, yeah, you watch, like, the inspiring sports movie, and I'm going to go jog 5 miles and get half a mile, and, your hamstrings popped. You're like, oh, yeah, I'm 40, whatever. Jeez.
Oh, that didn't work out too well. Yeah, it didn't work out too well. Doug Farrar of USA Today joining us here today. So there is some comparison to be made, I think, defensively, at least if they can live up to what we've seen in the last couple of weeks with the New Orleans Saints and the Indianapolis Colts. And there are more weapons offensively for New Orleans, but I wonder how much they actually need their offense to do if that defense keeps balling out. That, to me, is the biggest takeaway with New Orleans the last couple of weeks.
You know, it's interesting how defensive coordinators sort of flip it back and forth. And, you know, Todd Bowles of the Buccaneers, their defensive coordinator, is like, you know, the second coming of anyone in the first 5 weeks. Then you kind of flip to a straight four-man front and, you know, seven back, and it didn't work so well. But if you watch the Saints over the last 3 weeks, Dennis Allen, their defensive coordinator, has been scheming stuff up incredibly well. A lot of versatility with their fronts. He's putting their because their secondary isn't great, but he's scheming it up well. Marcus Williams, the safety, who I believe had an interception yesterday, they've been kind of bringing him down as a run blitzer. And right now, per Football Outsiders, the Saints have the best run defense in the NFL. It used to be Pittsburgh, and now it's New Orleans. So, yeah, that defense is tremendous. And you go back to, you know, 4 or 5 years ago when Drew Brees was throwing for 20,000 yards a season and their defense was horrible and they kept going 7-9. And Drew Brees is probably now like, well, now I have 11 broken ribs. Where was this when I needed it? But, yeah, Taysom Hill, Jameis Winston, however that goes. I think Sean Payton knows what Taysom Hill can and can't do. I think he's kind of got a Tim Tebow guy where it first read open, if you don't see it, run. Just don't make mistakes. And maybe with Jameis, he just doesn't think Jameis can do that. But, you know, you can reduce that game plan. Will that get you to the Super Bowl? I mean, you go back to the 2000 Ravens or the 2002 Buccaneers or the 2015 Broncos, who all won Super Bowls with really limited quarterback situations. And with the 2015 Broncos, I know we're talking about Peyton Manning, but that was also zombie Peyton Manning. He probably should have retired like the year before. If you want to win a Super Bowl defense and that kind of offense, it has to be a historically great defense. Like the last defense I could think of that could have won that way was the early 2010 Seahawks. They didn't need to because they had Russell Wilson. So if Dennis Allen keeps the defense at that level, anything can happen. But I would say, generally speaking, if you want to win a Super Bowl with 80% defense and 20% offense, you better be able to talk about the defense at an all-time level. I'm not ready to crown the Saints in that regard yet because it's been a few weeks that they've played this way. But if they keep playing this way, I mean, I wouldn't count them out.
Nor would I. And everyone wants to anoint Taysom Hill, or it seems everyone wants to anoint Taysom Hill as the quarterback of the future. I'm with you. The defensive takeaway and Sean Payton, those were the two headlines for me, and Peyton realizing what he had to work with in Taysom Hill yesterday. What's the proper context we need to evaluate Taysom Hill in from that one performance?
Well, he's had like 20 attempts in his NFL career before yesterday. He's still never thrown a touchdown pass. He ran for two, and we're used to that. He is a great athlete with a plus arm. He's also 30 years old. He's been in that system for 4 years. They still had to reduce it. Peyton said on the first play he got the motion call wrong, I believe per Peter King of NBC Sports. So, you know, it's actually very much like if you go back to when Tebow was with Denver and Mike McCoy was their offensive coordinator. And Mike McCoy got a lot of jobs out of this, and justifiably so. And all he told Tebow was, you have a first read open on every single play. By the way, this is the same thing Sean McVay did with Jared Goff when McVay came to the Rams. And Goff had one of the worst rookie seasons of all time. And then McVay came in and said, you're going to have the first read open on every play. If you don't see it, throw the ball away, run or punt or do something, outside of don't do more than what you think you can do. So with Tebow, it was first read opener run. And that's very – and I'm not denigrating Taysom Hill. He's the guy they chose. Sean Payton's been with him every day for 4 years, and Sean Payton forgot more about football during his breakfast this morning than I'll ever know. So if he thinks Taysom Hill's the guy, then Taysom Hill's the guy. But it's the context is reasonable success with a limited but favorable game plan. I mean, you look at his passing stats yesterday – about 50 of those yards came on an arm punt that somehow worked out. So this guy, and I wrote about it yesterday, is he a functional NFL quarterback? I mean, is he better than Jake Luton, who threw 4 interceptions against the Steelers yesterday? Probably not. But are they asking him to be more than that? Also probably not. So we'll see how that goes.
In conversation with Doug Farrar this morning after a wild weekend of NFL football, wraps up tonight with the Rams at the Buccaneers. Is what's broken in Baltimore fixable this season?
Well, I was really disconcerted by Lamar Jackson saying that it looked like the Titans wanted it more. And I was equally disconcerted with the – I assume you saw A.J. Brown's 14-yard touchdown where he blew up. It was like an 18-wheeler against a Yugo. Three different high-priced Chuck Clark and then Marcus Peters and then Patrick Queen blew those guys up. And then Derrick Henry just ran through the entire defense. I expect Lamar Jackson to struggle and be inconsistent. But when I see tackling mistakes like that and I see a team that's lost 3 of its last 4 games, I mean, is it fixable? Yeah, they have more than enough talent. But they need to fix it soon. They have the Steelers on Thanksgiving Day. And if they lose that game, now you're 6-5 and you're kind of hosed.
Nobody scares you right now with that team. No one at all. And that's pretty incredible to say with Lamar Jackson and what he did to this league last year. I'm not prepared to say I'm out on Lamar Jackson. It's never going to work again. But right now, the pieces they have on that offense, I can't believe how tight they look in high-pressure situations. Can you?
Well, and I've written at length about this because it fascinates me. I was Team Lamar when he came out of college. He was my number one draft prospect that year, and it wasn't remotely close. And I thought, okay, he throws from too narrow a base. They'll figure a few things out. He did pass. I mean, Bobby Petrino, say what you want off the field, and it's all, you know, funny, except for the stuff that's really disturbing. But the guy runs a complicated passing offense. So it wasn't like Lamar came in running the veer and a couple of RPOs and he had to figure it all out. I do think they got multiple problems on offense. Right guard Marshall Yonder retired. Left tackle Ronnie Stanley, probably the best pass-blocking offensive tackle in the game, is out for the rest of the season with injuries. The run game is not working the way they want it to. People are not biting on the pre-snap motion like they did last year. By the way, this happened to the Rams in 2018. They stopped biting on the Robert Woods jet motion. And it was around that time that Jared Goff turned back into a pumpkin. So all the favorable things that benefited Lamar Jackson in his ascent to unanimous MVP, none of them are working. And because the other stuff isn't working, they're putting more on Lamar's plate and asking him to win more as a passer. And if you watched his performance against the Patriots in week 10, I haven't really studied the Tennessee game from Baltimore's offense yet, so I can't say if this happened again. But I would say conservatively, Lamar left about 250 passing yards on the table with wide open, schemed open guys. So when Lamar says, you know, before that Patriots game, oh, defenses are calling out what we're about to run. First of all, that's not the problem. Second of all, defenses do that all the time. You know, teams have defensive coordinators and smart defensive players and advanced scouts and all that. And I've talked to a lot of players about this. Teams generally know what you're running. Your job is to out-scheme them and outperform them, beat them anyway. And the Ravens aren't doing that this year. So, you know, the performance issues and the consistency on defense, I think they can clean that up. My concern regarding the Ravens in a longer-term sense, whether it's this year or going forward, is kind of whether Lamar, I mean, what is he? What can you make of him? Like, how far can he go as a passer? They don't really have the answers to that yet. There wasn't really an off season. So hopefully, mercifully, you know, in 2021, there will be, and they can do more work on that. But right now, I don't think they're playing with an identity on either side of the ball.
Maybe it's just a bad season, or maybe it's a lot more. What is going on with Carson Wentz and the Philadelphia Eagles?
I think a few things. Because he hasn't – I mean, the Eagles' injury luck over the last 3 years has been just – it's usually injury luck is like anything else. There's a regression to the mean from a positive or a negative sense, which means if you had – if you led the league in injuries last year, you'll probably be below the curve in the year beyond. Football Outsiders has done a lot of studies on that. It's proven to be true. The Eagles have been, I believe, in the top five in injury bad luck over the last 3 years. So he's lost a lot of offensive linemen. I believe that, I mean, they were pretty much hiring UPS guys off the street for him to throw to last year. So I think it's an accumulation of being in a system and with personnel that you can't necessarily trust, just based off knowledge. That said, you know, Travis Fulgham has been kind of a revelation for them. And then it's the accumulation of pressure. And I think at a certain point, a quarterback, his head will start to explode. And I think with Wentz, the decision-making, I don't know what's up with the decision-making. I don't really know where to put a pin in that and go, okay, it's this. Because I'm not in those meeting rooms. I don't talk to Carson once every week like Doug Peterson does. I don't know what's in his head when he's making these throws. But I would say on a down perspective, if you take the season in total, I don't think there's a quarterback who's played worse down to down in the NFL, a starting quarterback, than Carson Wentz this year. And you've got a guy, they loaded up that contract. Even if they wanted to get rid of him next year, it would be $60 million dead money. They're stuck with him for the next 2 or 3 years. So whatever it is, I mean, I can tell you what it is from a physical perspective. He's bailing the pocket. He's frenetic. He's not reading things right. What's going on in his head? I mean, he's kind of a vanilla press conference, so he's not going to sit up here and say, yeah, on third and two when I threw the pick six, it was blah, blah, blah. He's not going to say that. What he says to Doug Peterson, and Peterson has said, I'm not going to bench him. You got a quarterback in Jalen Hurts that you took in the second round. You want to be a QB factory. Might be a time to get that second conveyor belt going, because it's bad. It's a really big regression for a guy that you really didn't see that coming.
Speaking of the second conveyor belt, quickly, Ryan Fitzpatrick. Sorry, this is Tua's team now, and yet there's Fitzpatrick playing in the fourth quarter yesterday trying to pull one out for the Dolphins against the Broncos. Did Brian Flores get this wrong by not leaving Tua Tagovailoa in there?
I don't think so. And usually I wouldn't support this, but I went back and watched the tape this morning. And the All-22 isn't out yet on Game Pass, so I want to see like more of what Tua was seeing. But the Broncos threw a lot of really interesting blitz stuff at him. They mixed up their coverages, you know, late pressure. And I've never seen Tua play that frenetically. He was bailing. He was trying to make deep throws early under pressure. I'm not sure what he thought he had to work himself out of against Denver's offense, which generally stinks. But that was not the Tua I have seen in Miami or the Tua I've seen in Alabama. I think if he played that way at Alabama, Nick Saban would have benched him too. Nick Saban has always had a quick hook with his quarterbacks. So we'll see what happens. I believe Brian Flores has said that Tua is the starter. But I think if you've got a guy who is throwing gasoline on his own bonfire, as Tua kept doing, he took a couple of sacks that were just read issues. Like, he wasn't seeing it right. He had an interception that was horrible. Lefty quarterback rolling to his right, throwing flat-footed, and it was just a dismal throw. It doesn't show up in a stat sheet because the guy, A.J. Bouye, covering his receiver, got busted for holding. But if you watch all those snaps, and keep this in mind, Brian Flores is a defensive coach. And in my experience, defensive coaches of quarterbacks, they don't care about explosive plays. What they hate more than anything is offensive mistakes. So Flores is sitting there like, okay, or standing there like, I can't watch this. I know Ryan Fitzpatrick is limited, but at least I know he won't, you know, vomit the ball over the field. And of course he comes in and throws an interception, you know, Denver had a really good defensive game plan. I think for whatever reason, Tua got blinkered and just wasn't himself. And I think in a case like that, a coach is entirely justified in saying, hey, you know, live to fight next week. You don't have it today. Let's just move on. And he's a rookie. This was, I believe, his fourth NFL start. You can't do that to Tom Brady or, you know, well, actually they're taking Rivers out in certain instances. But if you're Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson, that's not going to happen. If you're still kind of figuring it out, no, based on what I saw in the abstract, I kind of thought, ooh, that was interesting. But when I watched the tape, I'm like, yeah, I think Flores probably made the right call. There's a certain point because you're balancing between I want my quarterback to learn in these game situations and kind of the other side of the fence, which is if I leave them in here, it could cause like permanent damage. I was talking about that earlier.
Doug, great stuff as always. You can follow him at NFL_Doug Farrar. Thank you very much for your time. Continued good health, my friend, and enjoy the game tonight.
Thanks so much.